But thanks to God, who instilled the same sincere care for you into Titus's heart. Again, he praises Titus. Since he had spoken about charitable giving, he then talks also about those who are to receive and carry away the money. This was helpful towards this collection and in encouraging the contributor's engagement. For the one who trusts the person handling materials and does not doubt those who are to receive gives with greater generosity. And to ensure that this was the case then as well, see how he endorses those who arrived for this purpose, the first of whom was Titus. Therefore, he says, "But thanks be to God, which imparted the same deep concern into the heart of Titus." What is the same? Which he also had regarding the Thessalonians, or the same as mine. And notice the wisdom here. Demonstrating this to be the work of God, he also gives thanks to him that gave, so as to also motivate by doing so. For if God stirred him up and sent him to you, he requests through him. Therefore, don't think that what happened is mere human doing. And how is it clear that God motivated him? For indeed he accepted our encouragement, but being himself very eager, he went forth of his own volition. See how he also portrays him as doing his part without needing any prompting from others. Having referred to the grace of God, he doesn't attribute everything to God alone. By doing so, he attempts to attract them to deeper love, having said that he was motivated from within himself as well, for, being highly passionate, he initiated it on his own. He went for it. He strived for the treasure. He viewed your service as his own benefit, and because he loved you deeply, he didn't require my encouragement. But even though I encouraged him too, he wasn't motivated by that. Instead, he was moved from within himself and by the grace of God. And we have sent along with him the brother whose praise in the gospel is known throughout all the churches. And who is this brother? Some indeed say it's Luke because of the history he wrote, while others suggest Barnabas, for he also refers to the unwritten preaching as the gospel. But why doesn't he mention their names, even as he acknowledges Titus by name and praises him for his collaboration in the gospel, pointing out that Titus was so valuable that Paul could accomplish little of magnitude without him, for, because I found no Titus my brother, I had no relief for my spirit, and for his love towards them, declaring that his inward affection is more abundant towards you, and for his passion in this matter, for, he declares, he went of his own accord. Why doesn't he commend them in equivalent terms or name them? What can we conclude? Perhaps they were unknown to them, so he doesn't linger over their accolades as they've yet to experience their work. He merely provides enough to recommend them to the Corinthians and to keep them free from any negative suspicions. However, let's explore the grounds on which he also lauds this individual. Why does he praise him? Initially, he commends him for his preaching, asserting that he didn't just preach, but did so as he should, with the necessary intensity. He didn't just say he preaches and propagates the gospel, but whose praise is in the gospel. To avoid the appearance of flattery, he calls upon not just one or two or three individuals, but entire churches to bear witness to him, stating, "through all the churches." Then he heightens their respect for him from the judgment of those who had selected him. This too is important. Therefore, after declaring, "whose praise in the gospel is spread through all the churches," he added, "and not only that." What does "and not only so" mean? Not only for this reason, he says, is respect owed to him because he is recognized as a preacher and is appreciated by all. But he was also assigned by the churches along with us. From what I understand, it appears to me that Barnabas is the person referenced. His high status is indicated, for it also explains the purpose for which he was chosen. For he says, "to accompany us in the matter of this grace which is administered by us." Do you see how great his praises are? He's shown as a preacher of the gospel and had all the churches attesting to this. He was chosen by us and held the same role as Paul, and everywhere was a partner with him, both in his trials and in his dangers, as the word "travel" implies. But what does "with this grace, which is administered by us," mean? It means to proclaim the word and preach the gospel, or to also administer in terms of finances. Rather, it appears to me that it refers to both of these. Then he adds, For the glory of the same Lord and to prove your readiness, is what he's implying. This is what he means. We thought it best, he says, for him to be chosen alongside us, to be assigned to this task, to become a steward and a servant of the sacred funds. This is no trifling matter. Select from among you 7 men of good reputation, it says. He was chosen by the churches, and there was a collective vote from the entire congregation. So what does to the glory of the same Lord and your readiness mean? That both God and you may be glorified by becoming more eager, with the recipients of this money being of proven integrity, and no one being able to cast any unjust suspicion on them. Hence, we sought out such individuals and did not entrust everything to just one person in order to avoid this suspicion, but both Titus and another person were sent. To better explain for the glory of the Lord and your eager readiness, he added, Verse 20, avoiding this so that no one should criticize us regarding this generous act that is conducted by us. What could be the meaning of what was said? It is something deserving of Paul's virtue, and it reveals the significance of his deep concern and humility. For, he states, so that no one should doubt us or have the slightest reason to argue against us, as if we stole anything from the funds entrusted to us. That's why we send such individuals, and not just one, but 2 or 3. Do you see how he absolves them from any suspicion? Not just because of the gospel, nor simply because they were selected, but also because they are individuals of confirmed integrity, which is the very reason they were chosen, so that they would not be suspected. And he didn't say, so that you shouldn't criticize, but so that no other person would. Even though he did it for their sake, and hinted at it when saying, to the same Lord's glory and your eagerness. However, he doesn't wish to hurt them, so he phrases it differently. Avoid this. And he doesn't stop there. He also comforts again by adding, saying, regarding this bounty that we're handling, he began, skillfully blending sternness and praise, to prevent them from taking offense and asking, does he really need to watch us so closely, suspecting us of such things? Are we that despicable? He offered a counter to this, saying, the funds you've sent are substantial, and this copious amount could easily arouse suspicion among the wicked had we not provided that guarantee. Verse 21, for we consider things honorable not only in the view of the Lord, but also in the view of men. Who can match Paul? He didn't say, damnation and misery to those who choose to suspect anything of the sort. As long as my conscience does not condemn me, I ignore those who suspect. Instead, the weaker they were, the more he humbled himself to help. It's appropriate not to be angry with, but to assist the person who is sick. Yet, from what sin did we distance ourselves as much as he did from any such suspicion? Not even a demon could have suspected that blessed saint of any disloyalty. Yet even though he was far removed from such negative suspicion, he did everything and used every strategy to prevent even a shadow of doubt in anyone who might wish to suspect something wrong. He avoided not only accusations, but also criticism and even the slightest censure, even mere suspicion. Verse 22, and we have sent our brother with them. Look, once more he adds another and praises him too, both his own opinion and many other testimonies. Whom, he says, we have frequently found diligent in many areas, but now even more so. And having praised him for his own good deeds, he also commends him for his love towards them, and just as he said about Titus, stating, being really diligent he left on his own accord, he says the same about this individual, stating, but now even more diligent, ensuring in advance for them the foundations of love towards the Corinthians. And then, after demonstrating their virtue, he also encourages them on their behalf, saying, Verse 23, if anyone asks about Titus, he is my partner and co-worker for your benefit. What about Titus? He says, if it's necessary to say anything, I have this to say, he is my partner and co-worker towards you. This could be his meaning, or, if you will do anything for Titus, you are doing it for no ordinary person, for he is my partner. And while he seems to be praising him, he is actually complimenting them, showing them to be so considerate towards himself that it would be a great honor among them for anyone to be considered his partner. But despite this, he was not satisfied with only this. He added another thing, saying, co-worker towards you. Not just co-worker, but in matters concerning you, in your progress, in your growth, in our friendship, in our enthusiasm for you, which would particularly endear him to them. Or our brethren. Or if you wish, he says, to hear anything about the others. They too have great reasons to be recommended to you. For they also, he says, are our brethren and... The messengers of the churches, that is, those sent by the churches, then something that surpasses everything. The glory of Christ, for to him anything that is done to them is referred. So whether you wish to welcome them as brothers, or as apostles of the churches, or as acting for the glory of Christ, you have multiple reasons for goodwill towards them. Regarding Titus, I have to say that he is both my partner and a lover of you. Regarding these men, they are brothers. They are the messengers of the churches. They are the glory of Christ. Do you see that it's clear from this also that they were of such as were unknown to them? For if not, he would have promoted them with the same things he promoted Titus with, namely, his love towards them. But since they were not yet known to them, he says, welcome them, he says, as brothers, as messengers of the churches, as acting for the glory of Christ. Hence, he adds, therefore demonstrate to them, to the individuals of the churches, the evidence of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. Now demonstrate, he says, how you love us, and how we do not boast about you lightly or in vain, and this you will demonstrate if you show love towards them. Then he also emphasizes his words by saying, to the person of the churches. He means to the glory, the honor of the churches. For if you honor them, you have honored the churches that sent them, for the honor does not only pass to them, but also to those that sent them forth, who ordained them, and more than these, to the glory of God. For when we honor those that serve him, the warm reception passes on to him, on to the collective body of the churches. Now this too is no insignificant thing, for the power of that gathering is great. It is certain, at least, that the prayers of the churches freed Peter from his chains and gave voice to Paul. Their voice significantly empowers those who strive for spiritual leadership. This is why both the one who is about to ordain requests their prayers at that time, and they express their agreement and approval with known acclamations. For it's not appropriate to reveal everything in front of those not yet initiated. But there are times when there's no difference at all between the priest and his congregation. For instance, when we partake of the holy mysteries, we are all equally deemed worthy of the same things, not as in the Old Testament where the priest ate different things from those under him, and the people weren't allowed to partake of what the priest ate. But now, one body and one cup are presented to all. And in prayers, too, one can see the people contributing significantly. For those possessed and those under penance, the prayers are made collectively by both the priest and them. And all say one prayer, a prayer full of compassion. Again, when we exclude from the consecrated area those who can't partake of the holy table, another prayer must be offered, and we all similarly fall to the ground and all rise up together. Again, in the most sacred mysteries themselves, the priest prays for the people and the people also pray for the priest, for the words, with your spirit, mean nothing else. The act of thanksgiving is again shared. The priest doesn't give thanks alone, but also all the people. First, he hears their voices, and when they agree that it's fitting and appropriate to do so, then he begins the thanksgiving. Then, why are you surprised that the people say something with the priest, when they actually join the cherubim and the heavenly powers in offering up those sacred hymns? I've said all this so that the laity can be cautious, that we understand that we're all one body, having such differences amongst ourselves as between members and members, and we don't place the entire responsibility on priests, but we also care for the whole church as if for a communal body. This approach ensures greater security for us and greater spiritual growth for you. The apostles often let the laity partake in their decisions. For example, when they ordained the seven, they first consulted with the people. And when Peter ordained Matthias, it was done in the presence of all, including men and women. There is no tyranny in ruling here, nor is there servility in being ruled, but rather spiritual leadership, primarily in taking on a greater part of labor and responsibility on your behalf, and not in seeking greater honors. The church should live as one house, as one body it should be organized, considering there is one baptism, one table, one fountain, one creation, and one Father. Yet, why are we divided when so many important things unite us? Why are we being torn apart? We find ourselves having to lament the same things again, which I've often mourned upon. Our current state deserves lamentation, as we are greatly separated from each other when we should, in reality, reflect the unity of one body. In this way, the one who is superior can learn something from the one who is inferior. If Moses could learn something useful from his father-in-law, which he hadn't understood, much more can this occur in the church. And how was it that what the non-believer understood, the spiritual person did not? This was to ensure that everyone then understood Moses was a man. And although he parted the sea, although he split the rock, he still needed the influence of God, and those acts weren't of human nature, but of God's power. So let someone else stand up and speak. So now, if one person doesn't say something useful, let another stand up and speak. Though he might be inferior, yet if he says something appropriate, support his opinion. And even if he's the least significant, don't disrespect him. For no one of these people is as far removed from their neighbor as Moses' father-in-law was from Moses. Yet Moses didn't disdain to listen to him, but even acknowledged his opinion, was persuaded by it, and documented it, and he wasn't ashamed to pass down the event to history, thus humbling the pride of many. For this reason, he left this story to the world as if engraved on a pillar because he knew it would benefit many. So, let us not be oblivious to those who offer useful advice, even though they may be perceived as lesser, nor insist that the advice we offered prevails. But let the best opinion be accepted by all, even if it wasn't introduced by us. For it's a major achievement for us, even if we didn't identify what's required, if we accepted what was suggested by others. And God will reward us abundantly and will successfully achieve glory. For as wise as the person who speaks useful things may be, we who accept it will also receive the praise of wisdom and honesty. So if both houses and states and even the church are governed in this manner, she will experience greater growth. And so too will we, having well organized our present lives, receive the good things to come, which we all may attain through the grace of and love for mankind of our Lord Jesus Christ, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen.